The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello and good night, and welcome to The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Janothra Archer-Cartwright. I'm a family medicine specialist. I want to thank you for joining me this evening on Guardian Radio for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian Society. Thanks for joining us for another exciting show. We're live on Facebook, The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer, and you can like that page if you want to listen up on Facebook. And we are live on Guardian Radio, guardiantalkradio.com as well. So you can find us on multiple different places and sites. Brought to you, of course, by Medical Concierge Services. We are a family medicine clinic located on Collins Avenue in the Bahamas Heart Center, and we deal with everyone from children to adults. We also specialize in concierge medicine, so we can come to you if you cannot come to us. So give us a call, 326-1521. We're also on Facebook, the Medical Concierge Services, Instagram, medical_concierge_services, quite easy to find. And our website, www.mcsfamilymedicine.com. I'm hoping that the producer can let me record this. So I'm just trying to get really some permission from their side. You would have to do that on your side, producer. but it should be on the bottom of your screen in terms of permission. So we are going to do kind of part two of what we started about 2 weeks ago with our respiratory viruses. I have two other interesting articles that I really wanted to go through. I thought that would be helpful in this respiratory season. One is kind of the healthy habits to protect you against the flu. And the other one, of course, is called The Secret to Never Getting Sick. And so it's a little bit broader in the sense that well, as we deal and we combat with these various illnesses that are coming out, just some helpful tips that is going to help through the season, because we know that the weather is starting to change. And of course, we're having some unusual weather right now. We're having quite a bit of rain, and this subtropical storm is moving through. So we pray for all of those who are in the way and in the course of this storm tonight. Just that they would be safe and they would be kept well. Our country doesn't need any other disasters. So hopefully just some light winds and rain, and we will get through this pretty fine. So I'm pretty happy, hopeful that that'll be okay. We've got a little rain in Nassau, so we got a little touch of it, but hopefully it won't be any worse than that. So it doesn't look like I'll be able to record. So I'm just... we'll also have the recording, of course, on Facebook for those of you who would like to see that there. But just kind of getting started with our topic, we're just going to finish off our tips about the flu and how to have some healthy habits to just kind of keep the flu away. And of course, with the flu, you have to be in close contact with other individuals. So whenever someone is sick or you are sick, you want to, of course, avoid that close contact because, you know, the flu and viruses like these, they come in the air, usually like aerosols. So you want to stay out of close contacts. So if you're not feeling well, it's really important to know that. And either if you're very, very sick, you're going to see a doctor. But I would say at least stay home so that you can be away from other persons and not get them sick. And if you know that someone is very sick, you want to keep your distance or try to protect yourself as much as possible. Because when you do that, you help to prevent the spread, because usually you're most infectious, like when you originally get sick and then, you know, and you're coughing and you might have a fever. And so that's the time to really kind of stay away from others and stay away from people who are getting that sick. You also want to cover your nose with a tissue when you're coughing or sneezing. It may prevent those from around you getting sick. So, you know, if you're coughing, you don't want to just cough into the air. You can keep some tissues on you. You can keep some type of cloth so that you will not be letting all of those particles into the air. We've learned also, you know, throughout COVID, I think one of the most important things when dealing with viral illnesses is basically hygiene and washing your hands. So keeping your hands clean is extremely important because, you know, we put our hands to our face and our nose. We touch various things. We touch other people. And this is a really likely way for us to spread viruses and colds and even the flu. So you want to make sure you give your hands a good wash and keep them clean. You know, we use a lot of sanitizers these days. And, you know, I'm not too, like, full on using that constantly, because they are chemicals and they do tend to dry out some people's hands. But giving your hand a good wash in between, especially if you have the cold, you want to be the one to not be spreading germs around. Another important thing is that some of these viruses and illnesses do get through not just from people sneezing into the air, but also in the mucosa, in your ears or your nose. So if you're touching your eyes and your nose constantly, or if you're touching surfaces, that's also a way. So you want to avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth, because this is a way that germs can also be spread, especially if you're the one that's sick. If you are indeed touching these areas, you can spread it to other people. So you really want to practice your good hygiene habits as much as possible. And you can also disinfect your surfaces at work, home, and school, especially when someone is ill. So we'll talk about some other things like getting sleep and physical activity and managing your stress as well along the way. And of course, drinking a lot of fluids and nutritious foods. And we'll get into a little more in depth on that. So we already have a comment online. It says, good night, Dr. D. Archer. My late mother, I think that's supposed to be, taught me to use rubbing alcohol around my nose and chest and throat every morning. That's very interesting. I wouldn't say you want to always do that, but I think what she was trying to say is just kind of, she was sterilizing the area. But you want to be careful with rubbing alcohol, especially the green one. But, you know, perhaps she was using that to just kind of make sure that your surfaces were clean. So that's an interesting, I've never quite heard that one before. So if we're at school or if we're at work, we want to carry these things with us. And, you know, a lot of the times when you see a lot of these cough and colds and flus and stuff, it's coming out of the daycare system and coming home with the children. And so it's really important when you're sending your kids to like a daycare or a school or something to kind of know what their hygiene policies are, because that's usually where a lot of these coughs and colds get passed around. And it's kind of hard with little children to kind of tell them, like, you know, don't touch your nose and don't cough all over your friends. And so that's where they pick up a lot of these things. But if the school has a really good hygiene plan, sometimes it limits that, you know, especially to make sure that they don't allow kids to like share utensils and different things. And they identify when a child has a cold and will talk to the parents about keeping them home. So definitely, I think, you know, kids, young children, you want to keep them home when they're having a cough and a cold, because they can have a runny nose and really spread that around the class. And you see that quite often. So if your kid's coughing, he has a runny nose, you know, keep him home. And so you also want to look at, you know, and that goes for staff and students. So if you see also that the school is allowing teachers or aides to stay on when they're very sick and not feeling well, then, you know, that is kind of a red flag in a sense to maybe they aren't versed on their hygiene protocol or they don't know what to look forward to. And so, yeah, usually with my staff, if they're not feeling really well, we will send them home, because it doesn't make sense. If everybody else gets sick, then that just creates more problems. And so you can find different resources, especially if you're a school, on kind of what childcare providers and parents should look out for. And you can also see stuff like this on the CDC website. And when you're talking about at work, usually each workplace will have their own kind of policies or plan. And then of course you look at routine cleaning in these areas and the frequency in which they are done. And you have to make sure there's adequate soap supplies, water supply, alcohol-based rubs, as I think the texter talked about, to help remove germs, as well as disposable wipes if those are something that's in your environment. You want to make sure that the workplace has adequate supply of all of these things. And you want to train others and let everybody know what the protocols or the hygiene protocols are in your particular workspace. And if you feel sick, as we talked about, you want to go home, and you want to do that as soon as possible rather than really waiting to make others not feel well. So those were some of the things that were left over from our discussion on flu, and you can find that on the Facebook page that Doctor is in, just kind of wrapping up the flu things. And so we're going to talk a little bit broader in the sense about secrets of not getting sick. And because I haven't really had a chance, the last couple of shows of really kind of opening the phone lines, I am going to open them up if people have any questions, concerns, or other things that they want to talk about tonight. So 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. So the secrets to never getting sick. A lot of stuff in terms of preventative care can almost be what we call common sense. We all kind of know what these things are, but we don't always live by them. We don't always follow them. And so sometimes we have to remind ourselves of what are the things that are the secrets of not getting sick. And this is how you avoid both bacterial and viral infections in your school place, in your workplace, in your general life. And most of these solutions are pretty easy, and they're related to the things that we talk about all the time, which is a healthier lifestyle. And you'll find that the tips that we go through will help you with the prevention of colds and flus as well, and generally keep you from getting sick. And we all know that person that never hardly gets sick. And we need to sit down and question them and know what that's all about. And so I would say, you know, my grandmother, who is, 98 years old, praise be to God, really doesn't get like coughs and colds and flus too often like that. She's always been pretty well with those things. But she lived a pretty clean lifestyle in terms of not drinking, smoking, doing any of those types of things, walks almost everywhere in her life. And so, you know, a clean lifestyle will get you many, many years for most people. And so the number one thing on our list is eating green vegetables. So green leafy vegetables are rich in multitude of vitamins. The vitamins that we need as we use as the building blocks in our body to create a balanced diet. And that supports a very healthy immune system. And when we look at certain studies, there was a study done on mice, and they were eating what we call cruciferous vegetables. And what are cruciferous vegetables? These would be vegetables like arugula, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, kale, and radishes. They're all considered to be a part of that group. And so those are very good in boosting specific cell surface proteins necessary for our immune systems. And that helps our immune system to function. So you want to incorporate these types of foods into our diets, because when you incorporate those types of foods into your diet, it helps with the building of your immune system. And the study basically saw that mice who were deprived of these vegetables lost 70 to 80% of the surface proteins. And so it was really devastating for them to not have these particular vegetables inside of their body. So you want to introduce those into your diet. And of course, and this got really famous the last 2 years, is vitamin D. And there are really a lot of reports about what your daily vitamin D requirements are. And deficiencies in vitamin D lead to symptoms such as poor bone growth, cardiovascular problems, and a weak immune system. So a study from 2012 showed that children, some children needed to be to look at their adequate vitamin D levels, especially for those with darker skin. Now, I'm kind of back and forth with this, because I've also seen studies where persons with darker skin actually have lower vitamin D requirements, hence why I think that our levels tend to be a little bit lower. Because of melanin, we use vitamin D a lot better. And so, and we also get a lot of vitamin D from sun exposure. So being in a nice, warm, hot climate, we do usually get a really good source of vitamin D. And so I'd seen quite a few people, because, you know, I do do the IV vitamins, and I saw a lot of people, Black people coming in after going to the U.S. and saying, well, my vitamin D levels are really, really low. And they're telling me that I need to do vitamin D and asking for a vitamin D IV supplementation. And what I had to explain to them is, being a Black person, you know, the way that you use vitamin D is a little bit different. And so don't get scared about your vitamin D levels unless it's extremely, extremely low. We tend to use it a lot more efficiently and don't need as much, but you do need vitamin D. And we are in a sunny country, so most people are not going to be severely vitamin D deficient. Another comment online, Dr. D, most times people get sick is because they live an unhealthy lifestyle, whether it's unhealthy eating, drinking habits, smoking, not resting enough. Very true. And we're going to touch on some of those points, because everything you said, Citizens for a Better Commonwealth of the Bahamas, that's the commenter, is absolutely true. And, you know, it's usually something that's kind of missing or lacking. If you find it yourself, you're constantly getting ill, you're constantly battling colds and flus. It's usually one of those habits or one of those things is lacking. They also go on to say bacteria being trapped in the body because of lack of cleansing. That's an interesting way of putting it, but It's really saying that your body is under what we call oxidative stress, and they may not be able to fight off infection the way that it should. So you want to get foods as well. So we have sunlight as a big source of vitamin D, but also foods such as egg yolks, mushrooms, salmon, tuna, beef liver. These are also great ways of getting vitamin D naturally into your diet. And so for me, number one is naturally into your diet. Number two would be IV vitamin supplementation. Number three is probably oral, because most people don't take tablets every day, and we lose a lot of oral supplementation through, passing out of the body. You can also, of course, like we talked about, the supplementation. And we talked about before the different types of vitamin D, being like your vitamin D3, which is usually what a lot of supplements will come like. Right. So if you have no other way of getting it, then oral supplementation is going to be what you got to do. And of course, the next thing on our list is to keep moving. So activity, routine activities such as walking at least 3 to 4 times a week not only keeps you fit and trim, but lots of studies, like the study that was done in the Neurological Clinical Journal, showed that exercise kept down inflammation and chronic disease. It also reduces stress and releases stress-related hormones. It also accelerates the circulation of disease-fighting white blood cells, which are used to fight the common cold. So if you're exercising all the time, then you will have, you know, a reduced stress level, reduced oxidation that we talked about, and you will produce the white blood cells that actually fight off infections in our bodies each and every day. And so it's super, super important that exercise be a part of your regular regimen. And I know it's like super hard sometimes, because we work, we're in a society now where we do a lot of work. We're home, we're tired, we're kind of busy, we're always going. And it becomes hard. I know it was a lot easier when I was in my 20s to really get in the type of exercise that I need all the time. In fact, it was a lot of fun. And now it's, you know, with children and everything, it's busy. It actually becomes a chore. So we have to kind of schedule that in and try to make it something that's really, really good and something that we do consistently, because it has to become a habit in order to be a routine. And eventually, you know, we complain about exercise, but when we really get into it, we tend to enjoy it and our bodies really crave it, because there's so many things that routine exercise helps and improves about our health that we really can't do without it. One of my favorite things, which is like number four on the list, and what the commenter would have talked about, was getting enough sleep. So getting enough sleep, super important. Another one of those things that kind of always on the list of things that would make our lives better is getting adequate sleep. So it's extremely important, especially if you've been exposed to a virus, to get the sleep that's needed. According to a study published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, sleep is where it's at. So healthy adults were participated and they slept a minimum of 8 hours. So those persons who slept for a minimum of 8 hours for 2 weeks showed greater resistance to viruses. Those who slept 7 hours or less each night, about 3% more likely to develop virus exposure. So you can see just sleep alone plays a factor in how our bodies resist these things. And one reason may be that the body releases cytokines during extended periods of sleep. And these types of protein, they basically help fight against infection and regulate the immune system. So cytokines released during our sleep period help with the fighting of the viruses inside of our body. So sleep is extremely important, and that key number is going to be at least 8 hours of sleep. So a lot of people come in who are very stressed and they're saying, you know, Dr. Archer, I'm not sleeping. I'm only sleeping a few hours. And we go through something we call a sleep hygiene process, where we look at what they may be doing to cause them not to be sleeping as much as they can, kind of the things that they're doing each night, what is their routine, and we kind of fix each one of those problems so that they can get the sleep that they need. Because there are various things that complicate why people don't sleep well. And some of these things can be fixed with just one or two consultations on the matter. We tend to be able to get to the root of the problems without even getting on any forms of medication. And so this is really important part of taking a history in a patient that's having issues with sleep or insomnia. They are just amazed that sometimes it can be rather easy to fix some of those issues that they think that they're having and get you a good night's sleep. And that's what it's all about. And that really improves health, because what I've noticed with patients who don't sleep as they should, or they're having some problems with interrupted sleep, you'll find that their blood pressure is up, their sugar is harder to control. So a lot of different things go with that. And we know that will all contribute to decreasing your immune system and making it a lot more difficult for you to fight infection. So number five on our list would be to skip alcohol. So if you think you're not feeling well, going out, drinking, hanging out with your friends, probably not a good idea. So research shows that alcohol can damage the body's dendritic cells, and that's a vital component of the immune system. And an increase in alcohol consumption over time can increase a person's exposure to both bacteria and viruses. A study in the Journal of Clinical and Vaccine Immunology compared the dendritic cells and immune system responses in alcohol-fed mice to those who were not supplied alcohol. And they found that the alcohol actually led to suppression of the immunity in the mice to varying degrees. So doctors say that the study helps to explain why people, even if they take a vaccine, will have different effects with alcohol addiction. So alcohol does a lot to suppress people's immune systems in that sense. And you can see that a lot of these things actually affect the cells themselves that help to fight infection. Comment from online: vegetables, fruits, and water. For every soda, we recommend one bottle of water of the same size. Well, no, I actually don't recommend soda at all, right? So if you can cut soda out of your life completely, that's probably going to be the best thing that you can ever do. And you should probably be drinking 8 glasses of water per day. If you're going to have one soda, that should be something additional, not really included in that, because soda is really a lot of sugar. And so I don't recommend one-to-one at all. That's actually pretty not a good thing to do. What you want to do is you want to drink water as often as you can and occasionally have some other form of drink, maybe pure forms of coconut water or, you know, a lemonade that you make at home where you can control the sugar content. Because I find even a lot of the drinks that you buy, you know, I won't name the brand, but you buy some of these lemonade-based drinks and they are really, really filled with sugar. And if you look on the package of both soda and a lot of the juices that are out there, there's a lot of added sugar. So you want to go, if you're going to drink something additional, you prefer probably something that's just like a natural juice with no added sugar. But in itself, and I've had this discussion with many people, how many, let's talk about orange juice. How many oranges does it take to probably make one of those cans of orange juice, which is about 8 ounces? It's quite a few oranges. You're talking like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 oranges to get that much orange juice. And you would not normally drink that amount or eat that many oranges. If someone gave you 8 oranges to eat a day, you probably wouldn't eat all those oranges. So when you drink in the juice, you're not taking in the fiber component or any other nutrients. It's basically just the juice and the sugar content. And then on top of that, many companies then add sugar to that. And so you'll see like an added sugar component on top of the natural sugar that's in there. So I don't recommend soda at all. If you can avoid it, avoid it. Nobody's perfect. So I tend to leave that as an occasion. So a good tip on avoiding soda is don't buy it. Don't put it in your house, right? That way, if you really do want a soda, you leave it for like a special thing, like if you're out and there's nothing else to drink and then you have to. But otherwise, that is something that, you know, you don't need and you can take out of your diet completely. So, yeah, I don't recommend any sodas. Just a whole lot of sugar. That is the thing. So you want to skip the alcohol we were talking about, and because that's going to affect some of the cells that are going to be fighting infection. Also, you want to calm down. So we talked about how stress relates to your immune system. And so there's a connection between chronic mental stress and physical illness. So if you're constantly stressed, you can physically make yourself ill. Someone says, so to sell more, Dr. D, and is available all the time when you are on the go. Yes, keep your water bottle with you. Keep it topped with water. Take it for yourself because, you know, that soda is I think, really one of probably the bigger issues in this country. It's just the amount of soda people drink. And, you know, I get so surprised because especially we take really good histories. You know, my background is in starting from pediatrics. So we take really in-depth histories when it comes to children in their dietary needs and the amount of sugar and sodas and juice that they start children off very early is what creates the problem because you're setting your kids up for problems. Sorry, we have a call. Caller, you're on the air.
Good day. I'm just calling to say that let me cut the radio.
Sorry, caller, you're a little unclear. Turn your radio down.
Yeah, I'm just calling to say I understand that sugars are in orange juice and cranberry juices and stuff like that. But the effect that it has on different people, because, like, if I wake up in the morning and I have a cranberry juice and I normally mix my cranberry juice with orange juice, it normally cleanses my system early in the morning. I add water to it. And even though it has the amount of sugars that it has, it works for me. So is that something that is bad that I'm doing?
What do you mean it works for you, caller?
It works for me in terms of it flushes my system. In terms of when I wake up in the morning, I have a glass of water, yeah. And then I have my cranberry and my orange juice, and I mix the two together, right. And then I probably squeeze a bit of lime in it, and it flushes my system. So if it flushes my system, is that bad because I'm having too much sugar, or is it bad? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's flushing your system. If you drink fluids, the fluids eventually have to come out. So you will use the bathroom, but also what's coming out is sugar, right? So if you were to just, let's say, if you just drank water, right? Let's say you, instead of this juice, you drank two cups of water, right, or two big glasses of water, or whatever. You would probably still go to the bathroom and have a pass. And let's say you squeeze a little bit of that lemon in one of your glasses of water. So you just took a glass of water and then you squeezed a little lemon in one of those glasses of water. You probably would still go to the bathroom because that's a good amount of liquid to start your morning off with. What I'm saying is now, when you drink that water, there's really no sugar in that, right? When you drink the juice, however, that carries quite a bit of sugar with it. And most juice, especially if it has added sugar, is going to have almost the same amount of sugar as a soda. So it's almost like you just drank a soda. What that does is it after a while, your body doesn't process that sugar very well. And that's how a lot of people end up with diabetes. I'm not saying that you can't have a little bit of juice here and there, but I would say watch out for the quantity that you're drinking. Make sure that you're not overdoing it. If you're just having a really tiny small and that's it for the day, it may just be fine for you, but I'm just saying that it does have sugar content in it, and usually there's a lot of added sugar. So first thing with your juice, I would say, is make sure that it's just pure juice and nothing added. Then I would probably make sure that the quantity is small. If you look at what they call a typical juice glass, it's much smaller than the 8-ounce glasses that we tend to drink. Juice glasses should be those little tiny little glasses, which I think are about 4 to 6 ounces at most. But we tend not to use that anymore. We just use the big, whatever glass that we have. So what you're calling a flushing out, if you are having extra sugar coming through that, that could eventually either cause diabetes or it could affect your kidneys. But people have different tolerance level for all of these things. I think it's great that you start your morning with a glass of water. I don't mind the lime as well. I would switch to 2 glasses of water and a splash of lime and occasionally have a smaller content of juice. And that's going to be just a little bit healthier.
Without juice, that's what you're saying.
Sorry?
It's
healthier without the juice. Your better bet is to cut yourself an orange in the morning and have yourself an orange. The juice carries a lot of sugar, right? And that's maybe even why you're thinking that you're flushing yourself. But what happens when you have a lot of sugar is you usually pee often. So I don't know your status in terms of your health, if you're non-diabetic, if you're diabetic or whatever like that. But when our diabetic...
I am non-diabetic.
Okay,
I have a little issues with pressure. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, when I go in the morning, I have a glass of water, probably two glasses of water. And when I have my cranberry juice and my orange juice, I mix the two together and I put
And are you drinking any other juice during the day, drinks, juices or sodas?
No, I'm not drinking any of
them. All right. Yeah, I mean, I'm saying I'll be fair. If you're just having like maybe one small cup of juice in the morning, it's not probably going to make a really big difference. It's more for persons who are drinking juice first, juice and soda first, and then water is probably a secondary thought. Like I said, I do like the fact that you started off with the water. Right.
Okay.
I'm just saying limit the juice. And if you're only doing that maybe once a day or once every other day, you're probably going to be okay.
Okay. That's what I wanted.
Yeah. right. So, the healthiest thing to do is, just eat the fruit. Just eat the fruit. But I'm not an extremist with this stuff. If you can have a little bit of juice in the morning, life is really about moderation. Most of our diets and stuff are really about moderation and not taking it to any kind of crazy level on any extreme. And so the key is not to be that water is your number one choice. Everything else is kind of a secondary choice, or if you don't have it, or like the caller, he has a little glass of something in the morning and then he pretty much doesn't drink any soda and juice for the rest of the day. So he's probably going to be okay. But if you want to take sugar out of your diet, if you're looking to take more sugar out of your diet, juice and soda is the way to remove that, especially if you're drinking more than about 4 to 6 ounces of that every day. Okay. The question is, what do you think about aloe vera water? I don't mind some of these things, especially if you're doing it yourself, because you tend to find that even when things are supposed to be healthy, if it's processed, it's going to be not as good as if you're doing it yourself. So if you can go into your backyard, pick a piece of aloe, and make various different, things out of it, then I think that's going to be the best thing for you in moderation. And so nothing, not even some of the things in nature you're going to be doing all of the time, unless it's like something like drinking water every day, which your body requires, everything else is extra. So you want to do a little aloe, aloe has a lot of really good different qualities. I would say with those things, you want to not do them like all the time, but you can just add them in here and there. Okay, caller, we have another caller.
Yes, good night, Dr. Archie. How you doing?
How you doing, guy?
I didn't just realize it was supposed to be a different time, but I guess I'm all right. The water's off. I've been working all day trying to prepare myself, but now I can have a bunch of plants. I have to try, move up and down. I have dogs, et cetera. But I work all day. When I look, the water's off. There's a big main by Super Value, and there was a lake there before the rain even started. You know, so I just wondered what was going on, but a security guy told me a pipe would burst. So it's a curse. You know, it is to do all that work, and then I had to bathe in a very frugal amount of water, right? So it was thanking God. But listen, Dr. D, the guy who called us now, he's off to a good start. Maybe he may be drinking, there's a very bitter cranberry juice that does it, that one, there's one that doesn't have too much sugar, you know.
It's
very bitter, but...
Yeah, so there's cranberry juice, but what a lot of Bahamians and people in general drink is cranberry cocktail, which has a lot of sugar.
Yeah, and then, but they can actually look on it. So, but most of us, like when we see 28 grams or 31 grams, if I actually show you how much that is, if you see it, like, in sugar-wise, you wouldn't believe it, like, when you look at it, the amount.
A lot.
You understand. Yeah. So, you know, I have a nutritional prescription healing book for 30-something years. And I listen to these people come on the radio, these nutritionists, and I realized I'm on par with them. And so I heard the guy from New Life was on Warren Show the other day, and he was saying some great information, but he was incorrect in a lot of things. One was he talked about beets and the glycemic index, and the beets and the sugar and all that. And maybe he was talking about the processed beets. But I have of the philosophy of the idealist, anything in its raw form, and God made it naturally, can never have too much sugar, because what I learned and what I believe to be true is that when you eat the whole fruit, this is why you gave the correct advice just now, you know, also. The whole fruit, most of the sugar passes out with the fiber. When you eat the whole orange, like you told the gentleman, you don't absorb all the sugar that's in the fruit. And most people don't realize that. So this is being proven. So you better off eating the whole fruit. When I put the stuff in the blender, I drink all the pulp and everything, all of that in one. I don't separate. I don't juice just to get the fruit.
Yeah, juice,
Yeah, I use the pulp, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there's a very interesting paradigm. I have a friend, a cousin. He went to give some blood for his mom. And he called me and he said his iron was down to nine. It was really at the end of admitting to me that his iron was down to 9. And the doctors talked to him and told him what he should eat, kale, spinach, et cetera. The same thing I told him. But the thing is, I remember you had a show last week that I recorded, I think, or the week before, in which you explained... I know alcohol and other things rob the body of iron, but it was a condition that you call some type of metabolic dysfunction that I can't even remember too well, but you spoke about it. It was reasons for iron depletion through some metabolic dysfunction. I don't know if he have that, but he don't drink and he don't smoke. Yeah. And so I was wondering why his iron was so low. So when he told me his iron was 9, I say, big man, the last time my iron was 9 was when I was bleeding from my surgery and almost fall out. I never fainted. But when the doctor told me my iron was 9, I was confounded, because when I went to give blood for my mom, my iron was like 17. So I know the highest is like 18. And I'm a vegetarian, and a friend of mine who was also a vegetarian, his iron was low. He couldn't even give blood. So I don't know what I am doing. Also, I think the marathon man, I haven't had the flu from 1998. So
people process things different ways, but there are a lot of vegetarians that don't eat healthy.
Yeah, that's true. But people
say... So they don't eat meat, but what are they eating, right? A lot of them are eating a lot of starch, and they're calling themselves a vegetarian. They're not vegetable-based. So if you're going to live that lifestyle where you're not eating meat, which gives a lot of iron and specific nutrients, you have to know how to eat as a vegetarian properly, which is a high, green, leafy vegetable diet. You know, so a lot of them don't do that. When I hear a lot of people, because I wonder sometimes, I'm like, how are some people so big and they're vegetarians? And then they go into what they're actually eating. And I'm like, man, you might as well eat meat, because, you're not eating healthy.
Yeah, because the plants don't have the complete protein. So you have to combine the legumes and certain greens in order to get the protein. Like the Ezekiel bread, the Bible.
A lot of people who aren't eating meat don't like beans and lentils.
Yeah, but you have to, do that.
That's most of your protein right there.
I eat a lot of spinach, and I started. You know, the book has so much information that is always, chlorophyll. I started to include chlorophyll more in my diet. I'm not even healthy.
You sound like when I was really going green, I had all the chlorophyll and stuff like that. I couldn't keep up with all of that kind of stuff like that. I was never vegetarian,
I used to drink those. And then I used to include the bee pollen in my diet. But, I used to smoke marijuana. So, that was a bad habit that I had. And then also drinking beers, which are carbonated also. So I'm not getting away. But I stay active, Dr. D. But I haven't had the code from 1998. What do you think about it? I think the marathon, I haven't had the code from 1998. And there's no need for me to lie.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I don't know why.
You work hard. So that means you're getting a lot of your Xbox.
And I like the sunlight too. They thought I was going crazy during the height of the pandemic, sitting in the sunlight. They was hoping 52 catch COVID, right? But, Dr. D, the thing is, a lot of people, this guy was talking, he's up the issue with the pressure. He called. So, you know, it's all about helping people. You could do a show anytime. But you see, most people don't understand the imbalance of salt intake is what causes blood pressure. It's not salt in itself. But there's a gross misunderstanding about salts and the way they work, because salts really need a metal in order to form a salt. So sodium would be a metal, magnesium would be a metal, and so they're highly electronegative and positive. So they always readily combine with another element to form compounds.
Perhaps I'll write a book one day on the moderate approach. Finding balance in every diet. Some people go to such different extremes with stuff. Usually either extreme is not helpful.
Yeah, but I was saying with the guy from New Life, he's very informative, but he was saying beets, the sugar content. But I was saying I like beets, but I realized the ones in the can, they put sugar in them to make it more palatable. Yeah. And that's what it is, because when you boil the raw beets, there's no way you can convince me that beets could give me diabetes, because
when you boil a real beet, it's not as sweet as the ones in the can.
Yeah,
they're delicious,
but beets are low in calories
and
high
in
nutrients.
I can eat raw beets. You know,
I
love fresh beets.
Yeah, but you know, we really don't know what to eat anymore, and it's frightening to me, because even with salt intake. And we don't, the movements, the intra and extracellular fluid in the body knows when this natural homeostasis, the body knows to balance these things. And there's a lot of natural ways to do things that have been hidden from us because we have lost our innateness from God. But I just don't understand why is it that, you know, the thing is there's no one more knowledgeable than the collective. Dr. D, hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I would have liked, seeing that Dr. Bettler had given me some advice over the jaundice thing with my, I just wanted to send a picture of my newborn, and everybody who sees him is just fascinated. I don't know why, but it's just like, I don't know. It's only 3 months now. He's coming along. I was trying to find out, I really was reluctant to give him. Why is it that they told me that I had to give him the dairy in order to help speed up the process to get rid of the bilirubin? They recommended breast milk along with. They recommended breast milk along with the formula milk.
It's for water and fluid. It's probably just for the water and fluid.
Yeah, I read it. Yeah, but with the
breast milk, he may only be getting so much, especially early on. And what they're trying to do is flush the bilirubin out of there.
He's very sharp. I already held him up in front of the mirror, Dr. D.
Yeah.
I'll send a picture on the thingam so you all could see it.
Okay. Sounds great. Congratulations, though.
All right. Bless them. Have a good night, doctor.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, caller. Thank you very much, 52. We have another comment online. It says, no, Dr. D, the caller is incorrect. I think he's talking about the previous caller, the gentleman with the juice. If you eat a lot of sweet fruits like mango, etc., your blood pressure can go up. It goes back to the amount you consume. There is a relationship between diabetes, hypertension, cholesterol, and weight. So I don't know the gentleman's actual condition. But if you eat healthier in general, it helps all of those different things. And so you don't want to have to be processing a lot of sugar out of your body. That's just more work. And so all of those are somewhat related. So you want to keep each one of those areas balanced in that way. And so our number seven, before we get done, is actually probably going to be a good alternative to those juices that everyone wants to drink. And it's a bit of green tea. So green tea has been taken in for centuries, and it's always associated with good health. And so there are really a lot of benefits to green tea, including antioxidants, such as flavonoids, which are really good to fight infection and to improve your immune system. And so study in the Journal of American College of Nutrition, several fresh brewed cups a day can lead to potential health benefits. This includes lowering your blood pressure and reduced risk of cardiovascular disease. So green tea. And so what I tend to do is, especially when I was kind of doing a version of keto at one point in time, is learning to drink tea and coffees with minimal or no sugar. And so, you know, if you can incorporate something like a green tea with minimal to no sugar and kind of maybe replace what you're using, like juices and stuff like that, that's probably going to be a really good replacement, because, you know, green tea does have a bit of flavor, and you can get various green teas. And it helps you to limit the sugar content, because if you were to put just a tiny bit of sugar or no sugar at all, and a good way to eliminate needing sugar from your coffee or your tea is just to gradually cut it out more and more. And then for coffee, I find if you are able to take dairy, if you add dairy to your coffee, sometimes you don't need any sugar. So good ways of just looking at other alternatives to just juices and sodas, which we've really come accustomed to, because our taste buds are used to that amount of sugar. So you have to now transition your flavor profile, and probably instead of having orange juice and cranberry juice, eat a few cranberries and have an orange. And that's going to be a lot healthier way of going about it. All right. It's not, you know, you can have a little bit of these things, but if you start, you know, trading them in for other stuff or healthier versions of it, then, you know, you have a better lifestyle. One of my favorites is adding foods with vitamin C, or, you know, vitamin C supplementation. And we also do IV vitamin supplementation. So we do high dose vitamin C in our clinic for those who are interested in IV vitamins. But you can also get your fresh vitamin C from your fruits and vegetables. So you should really try to make your plate as colorful as possible. And this helps you to maintain the level of vitamins in your food. And usually that means that the food has a lot of antioxidants. And so by using fruits and vegetables in every meal, you basically end up cooking with a rainbow of different foods, and you get a wide variety of vitamins, including vitamin C. And vitamin C has been found in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition that it does and may help the immune system that's warding off colds and flus, especially those who are stressed. So a lot of people, when they get sick, they take a lot of vitamin C. We're not sure if it reduces the length, but definitely if you're infusing your body with vitamin C before, it reduces your risk of actually getting the cold. And if you are doing vitamin C after you're sick, then I do a higher dose of vitamin C than most people. So, of course, we talked about good hygiene, and we just want to include showering, washing your hands, you know, covering your mouth, those type of things, the alcohol-based cleansers, you know, those things. We talked about that. Keeping it personal, so not sharing things, especially like toothbrushes, towels, utensils, drinking glasses. We want to wash those things because we're not too sure if someone has an early viral or infection or something going on. So you don't want to be sharing those things very often. And you want to wash those things in hot water and detergent in order to make sure that they're clean and all the surfaces are really clean. So when you're out, I tend to sometimes opt for, you know, disposable stuff, but then, you know, you have to weigh, I guess, the environmental impact of that. So those are kind of like some of the main things that would keep you kind of safe through there. And that would involve your regular exercise, your healthy foods, staying hydrated throughout the day. We didn't mention hydration, but hydration is really, really important. And it goes back to starting off the day, as the caller said, with water. And people don't know how important that is. Just kind of flush your kidneys, start off with some water, one or two glasses in the morning, maybe before you work out or you start your daily routine, is a really good way. And what I find too is when I drink a lot of water, it gives me a lot more clarity to start off the day with. I do a lot of kind of thinking and introspection, and I listen to a lot of videos that are going to be helpful or tutorials early in the morning. So really learning for me early in the morning is great. And I like to start with some water that really kind of opens up my mind and my brain to be accepting of the things that I'm going to learn and do that day. So water hydration is going to be super important. getting that regular exercise and food. So those are kind of like the main things. I'm just going to touch quickly on some foods that might actually weaken your immune system. And we kind of talked about it as we went along. And of course, sugar is that number one thing. We talked about how it affects tumor factors, so many different things, and affects your immune system. Diabetics tend to have a sluggish immune system because the amount and the concentration of sugar in their body. So sugar right off the top is going to be something that's just going to really affect your immune system. And it's all the things that really that lead to disease, having it in excess. Things like sugar, things like salt. So really salty foods, having them consistently, you know, and consuming higher than normal. So we all have daily values of certain things like salt because we need the salts in our body. But our bodies tend to really work best when we have a specific amount of these things. And when we go too far out of that, we can actually cause excessive immune responses and inflammation in the body. So you really want to rid the body of any, salt basically also inhibits normal immune function and suppresses some of the anti-inflammatory responses. And so you can see how a lot of these disease processes are all interconnected and interrelated. So excess salt. And I would like to say, I think one of the callers mentioned it earlier, is not that we also think that like salt causes hypertension, but what we do know that it is a part of the inflammatory process once you are hypertensive. And that's why we usually tell you to lower your salt, but that has to be balanced. You don't want to completely get off of salt. You want to find where your body is able to maintain its homeostasis for itself. So studies show that a high salt intake may impair normal immune function, promote inflammation, and increase your susceptibility to autoimmune diseases. Foods high in omega-6 fats, these foods that can be found in the diet are pro-inflammatory foods, and a lot of studies relate this to diabetes. And so you want to stay away from foods that are rich in omega-6, and you want to eat more foods that are rich in omega-3s like salmon and mackerel, walnuts and seeds, and fewer foods that are like sunflower or canola oil or soybean oils are going to be like the omega-6. And a lot of people cooking with canola oil and the corn oils and the soybean oils. And so that in itself can be a form of inflammation inside of your family. It may just be the cooking oil. And these are really common oils. I looked in the food store and one of the first Bahamians love Western oil. Canola oil, corn oil, soybean is what that stuff is made out of. So I've had to take a look and kind of switch to olive oil for a lot of foods, which means that you would decrease the amount of frying that you see. So question online, Dr. D, what do you think about sway? So sway the fish? I don't eat it because it's not real fish. It's like a processed piece of fish to me. And so I don't eat sway. There's another one too I don't eat, I can't recall right now. And so we are here in the Bahamas, there's no reason for any Bahamian to be forced to eat sway, right? We've got, and I know fish here is expensive and it shouldn't be because it's all around us. But this whole thing of all this imported sway because it's cheap, it's really not good for you. And I don't eat sway. It has to be like I'm somewhere out of function and I'm starving and that's all that is to eat. Hopefully they cooked it really, really well. So it's not that I have never eaten it, but I would never go and purchase sway. I would never go looking for it. And it wouldn't be the thing that I would pick up if we were, you know, we had a selection of food. I just think it's pretty bad. So I can probably count on my hand the number of times I've eaten that, and I have no intention to eat it again. Just to complete our list, fried foods. So we all kind of know these things, processed or charred meats, fast food in general, foods that contain additives. So you want to eat things that are less processed, highly refined carbs, that's the high sugar foods and these things that are embedded with it. And, you know, high fat foods with saturated fats, artificial sweeteners, please, guys, you know, if you're going to have a little bit of sugar, it's better than these artificial sweeteners that they're putting in the foods and beverages is just bad for you. All right. And it's really bad for your immune system. And sadly, a lot of people think they're eating healthier by doing artificial sweeteners. But it really messes up your gut bacteria and does a lot of really bad things. So say goodbye to the artificial sweeteners. And if it's in your beverages, you're going to cut it out. You're going to be better off just cutting down on the amount of natural sugar that you're putting in your body than adding an artificial sweetener. So we're out of time, everybody. I want to thank everybody for listening in this Tuesday evening at our new time, 6:30 on Guardian Radio. We will see you next week with another interesting topic on health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. Good night with me, Dr. D. Archer, on The Doctor Is In. See you next week. Bye-bye.